Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Gwen. I'm here with Nicole and Flash, and tonight we have Flash Silvermoon as our guest. She is going to be speaking about a lot of things, but mainly we're going to discuss some of her wonderful healing with animals. She is an animal intuitive and healer. And she also works with flower essences and vibrational remedies and elixirs and gem essences to help do her healing work. So we're going to talk all about that and much more this evening, but we're going to start out with a song by Flash called Dancing with the Snake. So listen up.
That was great.
Okay, take the mute button off, Gwen. I'm going fast. Is that a synthesizer?
Yeah, I played everything on there. And
yeah.
I was also playing djembe underneath it, too.
Wow.
That's awesome.
It's very voodoo.
Really awesome song.
Thank you.
It is. It is very voodoo, and it's extremely timely, isn't it? Did
yeah.
everybody enjoy Fat Tuesday? Hey.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I wrote that song, would have been probably about 99.
That's
but
a lot.
Everything I do is usually about 10 years ahead.
Sure is.
Not like 10 years after, like the band, but 10 years ahead.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite bands. We were having a conversation in the chat while the music was playing, and I was saying it's a very sexual song.
Just a tad.
Just a little bit, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Flash, why don't you give us a good description of who you are, and I know that a lot of our listeners will know because you did Wise Woman with Anita just, I think it was a couple of weeks ago. It was a really great show, too.
I enjoyed that. But
why don't you give us a good description of your life as it is?
Oh, my goodness. My life as it is, as it was, as it will be. I wear a lot of hats. And I describe myself and have been described as a spiritual Renaissance woman. And I think that helps. But as I've learned more and more of what a shaman is, that's a pretty good description because most shamans, as well as having a really deep spirituality that is profound, they also have creative abilities. And some it's music, some it's art, some it's more than one thing. And when I first started understanding the role of a shaman in their community, I said, oh, so it's not such a weird thing that I've been a professional musician for most of my life and also a deep spiritual practitioner, healer, teacher, psychic, work with animals, you know, pretty much that's what the old job used to be. And so, you know, so in a lot of ways, I'm carrying that shamanic tradition forward, both within my music and art and within my spiritual practice, which absolutely includes the animals.
Yeah, I read a good deal of, I think I read everything on the site, but I'd really like for you to, if you can, share with us the process that you go through, how you communicate with animals, because I get more people who ask me, do you know how animal whisperers or animal psychics or animal intuitives are able to communicate with the animals? And I've always thought, well, I think it must be an individual or a rather unique experience. Still in all, there has to be a few things that are common amongst,
yes,
like there are among psychics or people,
sure,
who are able to tap those subtle sensualities. Like, I've always wondered if talking to animals is anything like, you know, giving them pictures or something.
No, see, the thing is, you don't give them, they give you.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they you know, you can send them pictures, too, when you want to commune on a certain level with them. But, for instance, being a psychic, you're going to have... some people have all three, which I do, clairaudience, which is the hearing, and that usually comes through like thought transference. And then there's clairsentience, which is the feeling, where you feel what a person or an animal is feeling. And the clairvoyance is you see. And you'll see the images and you'll see things. When I work with the animals, one of the ways that I'll see is I'll put my hands on their back and they will shoot me pictures.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I'll just start to feel them, which is, you know, it's pretty intense and it's not my least favorite way of communicating, but I'm also real good at it because I'm such a intuitive, really. And it's not always
easy. Your least favorite way of communicating with them, putting your hands on
their back? No. I love that. But I'm saying the clairsentience, the feeling of their pain or the feelings of people's pain and most especially the planet's pain. I like that the very least for the obvious reasons. Doesn't feel good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's also, it's very valuable, and it's a good way to understand things. I am constantly being taught by my animals. When I was needing to work with one of my cats, and by the way, working on your own animals, it is the hardest. And I grew my abilities through that path. She taught me by sitting in my lap to do a regression how I could totally bind my energy with hers so that I felt everything she felt, which was needed because I had to do psychic surgery on her toward the very, very end of her life. And it was why I was able to do it, because I knew any time I moved, I knew exactly how she felt. That was very interesting. One of the most go ahead.
Can you explain a little, do a little clarification or explanation on what just exactly what psychic surgery is?
Well, it's not easy, and it's not that the animal communication is something everybody can do. Psychic surgery, not so much. And, you know, I just really got very deep into her body psychically and used my hands and also specific crystals to feel my way in to remove something that was disturbing her. And I've done it a couple of times. It's not the main thing I do, but I definitely do that.
It's an extraordinary thing.
It is. Probably the most profound experience that I've ever had working with an animal, and what a gift it was when I was called to the Ears Sanctuary back in 2005, I think it was, and my favorite tiger there, Duke, was dying. And they called me just to come be with them. They said, can you help him die? And I said, please, let me try to help him live. Because he was a great cat, and he is a great cat. And I went and I sat with him. And the thing about communicating is you observe and you listen. Most people think it's about talking to the animals. It's about listening to them.
Yeah.
And you must start off with a basic respect. And just knowing that we're not better than them. We're on an equal par, and we can communicate with each other from that point of view. And you just, you know, humble yourself to the process and see what comes. And I could tell that he...
Is there...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt the story about Duke.
Basically... He had been comatose for 5 days and hadn't been up, certainly wasn't eating or drinking, and that's why they thought he was going to die, which was pretty reasonable, and his respiration was almost nothing. So I concorded that he would need something to kickstart his heart. And I discussed this with another homeopathic friend. And I went in the cage with him, and I gave him, after I did some off-the-body and on-the-body work with him, I gave him homeopathic digitalis and then got out of the cage. And up he popped as if nothing was ever wrong.
Really?
What is that, homeopathic? What was
digitalis.
It?
Well, digitalis is what they give people for heart attacks.
Ah.
To get the heart started. So that's where I started with him. And he just popped right up, started drinking his water like, what's everybody all fussed about? And that was just the beginning of the healing. And, you know, you might want to ask something, and I'll explain as we go about how we actually fixed him and how I listened.
Well, you know, listening, in other words, you open your heart, you open your mind, and you get quiet. And you allow whatever to come. People are kind of, you know, and because I've had folks ask, and I am not an animal intuitive, but I do my best as an intuitive with what I do. I like to translate that whenever I can. I really understand what you're talking about in shamanic, you know, demonstration of life. What I'm thinking is that folks may understand if you were to tell them that, you know, you find a sort of, is it a unified meditation or is it more than that?
It's not really that at all. Like, once he started getting better, but he still wasn't eating. So I went over and I said, Duke, what's up? What's going on with the food thing? And he shot me a picture. Well, no, before he did that, he said so plainly and so matter-of-factly that if I wasn't really listening, it would have gone right over my head. And he just turned to me and he goes, and I can hear it in my head, my belly feels pretty stuffed up. And I said, oh. And I told that to the people, you know, who own the place.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was being a real character. She says, well, then, what are we supposed to do about it? And I looked at him. I said, Duke, what are we supposed to do about it? And he shot me this outrageous picture of himself over a deer haunch. And at the same time, he sent me the words. And he goes, next roadkill deer is mine. And it was funny as hell. And I explained what he was saying. And then they went on, it was trick-or-treating for deer. And they just went up to strangers' houses all in the area, because there's a lot of hunters around there, and to see who could give them some deer. And sure enough, they came back, and sure enough, he started eating. What I didn't know, and what Jay, who's one of the owners there, said, oh, by the way, deer is his favorite meat. So, and the other woman, Gail, she looks at me after I got out of the cage from that first encounter, and she goes, Flash, you're a witch. And I said, yeah, you know that. I've never purported to be anything else. Of course I am. And she says, but Flash, you really are a witch. I said, yeah, I know. This is not news. She said, but Flash, when you put your arms over him, I felt this huge wind, a hot wind, go flying right by me, because she was standing next to me in the cage just in case anything went wrong. And I said, great, that's exactly what you should have felt. And she just kept shaking her head. She says, I felt it all right. So I'm really trying to work in these sanctuaries and bring people up to speed about using holistic methods and communicating with them.
I think it's so interesting that he said the roadkill, the next deer roadkill is mine.
That's exactly what he said.
Wow. Not go out and kill me a deer, but the next one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, look at that. That's amazing.
Well, because that's why that's how he knows he gets. They would get roadkill deer. They would never go out and kill them.
Right.
You know, the different bureaus, they know to bring roadkill deer over there.
Oh, that's really cool. Wow, that's great.
When did you begin to work with different homeopathy, the flower essences? And I think you were telling me you actually make your gem elixirs.
I do. And they are kick-ass gem elixirs. I must say, I don't think anybody else makes them the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on one level, they can be very, very simple. And you can put a rock in water and set it in a nice, magical, clear place, and you've got a gem elixir. But that's not what I do. And some of them, I'll ask Spirit, what do we need to make? What needs to happen here? And I get guided as to what that is. And
yeah.
I mean, one time I thought I was going to be making lithium quartz, which is one that I make a lot for the primate sanctuaries, because that works so beautifully for them. They love it.
That makes sense. That makes
they
sense.
Absolutely love it. And it's so cute. If you go on, I think on my Facebook page, I've got loads and loads of pictures for my work in all the different places and also on my website. And you can see one of the little capuchin monkeys. I'm spritzing him, and he grabs the whole bottle, and he holds it between his little hands and puts his mouth right on the nozzle. And he's like, this is all mine. They just love it. And you'll see these animals, they'll be going boing, 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 bouncing off the walls because they're primates and they're in a wonderful habitat at Jungle Friends. Best thing they could have being incarcerated, essentially. But, you know, it's not an easy life for an animal that should be loose. And nobody in these different sanctuaries believes that they should be having these animals. They're taking care of them because they're here to be taken care of, because humans have put them in the predicament they're in. But everybody believes they should be out in the wild. So the gem elixirs help them accommodate to the situation, and they can just relax. And, of course, the women who run the place say, can we have some for us, too? I said, sure. So I, you know, for solstice, I brought them, like, about a 20-ounce bottle of that gem elixir to use liberally. Because they'll be rescuing these monkeys out of the horrible labs. And so they all need a lot of attention.
Right.
Yes. So how? Well, first of all, where do you do the major amount of your work? You're in the middle of the state, aren't you?
I'm in North Central, North Central, not far from Gainesville.
Okay.
And you know, people will bring their dogs and their cats and their skunks and their ferrets. They'll bring them over here. Horses, I generally have to go elsewhere to work on them. And then Ears is a beautiful, mostly big cat sanctuary in Citra, Florida. And then Jungle Friends is a primate sanctuary, and that is near La Crosse, also near Gainesville. And there's a horse sanctuary, Wind Horse Farms, that I just worked at, which was fabulous. And they're not far from Citra, which is all near Ocala.
Yeah, that's horse country up there used to be.
Yeah, it still is. It's trying to be. There's a lot of places up for sale.
Really?
But after working with people for 42 years, bringing in the animal work was just so healing for me.
Yeah. Wow. And so with working with the homeopathy, I'm very interested to know, do you let your own guidance, you know, with what you know about like the arnica and the foxglove and the digitalis, and I mean, do you just let your intuition guide you, or do you do any kind of specific studying and research to also guide you with
all of
what
it.
You're doing?
All of it.
So it's yeah.
And I also ask the animals. The woman who really trained me in terms of the animal communication work was quite brilliant. Kay Cornish Mann was her name. She was from upstate New York. And I did most of my training on the telephone with her, working on my own animals. And she was tough.
Wow.
She was tough. But I learned in a way, especially when I would be faced with doing it all alone when she was on sabbatical and couldn't help. Because not only could she communicate with the animals, but she had a great working knowledge of all different remedies.
Yeah.
And, you know, knew all about food and stuff like that. So she had a wealth of information. There's loads of communicators that can just communicate. And there's loads of healers that can just tell you products. But I learned to do it all thanks to her.
Well, and have you thought about in turn, do you have an apprentice, as it were, anybody that you're teaching to do the same kind of healing work and making the remedies and knowing the remedies and everything?
I have classes that I give to women weekly here. And sometimes I'll do just a whole day of animal communication workshops. And I'm certainly, you know, open to that if the people who are listening are in the Florida area. You know, I'm always willing to make a day to do just that for people who want to organize such a workshop here. That's fine. That's very good. And I want to teach people. I absolutely don't want this to die with me.
There you go. I hear you. Wow. That's really wonderful. Now, how would you, I'm a dog person. I have a horrible time with cat dander and cat fur, and so even though I like cats, I'm not very good around cats. I can't sleep, you know. But I've always had dogs, and I have a little rescue fellow that's my pal now. And I know that people often will say, well, use Reiki energy, or, I mean, I work with energy and light standards and symbolism and color with what I do at the bench. But with a little animal, I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you, if I wanted to send healing energy into my little guy. What can you tell me, can you tutor me through how to send him calming energy and to help him to get through, say, he was a bad boy and he had to stay in his little condominium for a while and he comes out feeling very bad. But
well, the question is, though, the question in that, I would look at it very holistically.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to understand why he was bad first. Because
sometimes,
a lot of times, the only thing that an animal can do to get your attention is to act up, like peeing outside the box for a cat, chewing something up for a dog. You know, they all have their different skills of getting our attention by bad behavior. But sometimes
mine is a multi-skilled.
Yes. And sometimes they tag team you. If you have multiple animals, they will do that.
This little guy, his big thing is that he goes, I have wonderful honeysuckle and passion flower all over my fences and some lattice up between me and the next door. But they have all these, they're really nice, but they're very big rescued, what do you call them, Rottweilers. And he'll go over and pick a fight with them, not a fight, he'll go over and start barking at them. And that's when he's a bad boy, and I put him in his condo. I'm trying to teach him, no, that's bad, that's wrong, you know. So when I catch him, I put him into his little condo until he understands that he's done something wrong, as far as I'm thinking. But I'm very open to hearing what I might be doing wrong with that kind of discipline, or not listening completely to what is really going on there with him going over and picking on the big boys next door with that fence in between the middle. Oh, and I know people have these problems, you know, with their...
Well, what I'm getting about...
urban.
Right. Well, what I'm getting about this, it's not like he's being so bad. There is some jealousy involved. And I think they're overstepping their bounds a bit. Mm. Energetically.
Wow. Well.
And I think they're trying to, you know, hey, we're tough, you know, we're just going to run the show around here, so don't you be thinking you're such a big shot. So, you know, it's kind of like a pissing contest going on between them, verbally.
Elroy's a little guy. He's...
Yes. Yes.
So, wow.
So the little guy is like, oh, yeah? You think you're just so big you can just have anything you want? Oh, yeah? Well, I'll tell you, this is my spot.
Right. This is my spot.
So, there's
a... He can go over and get action at the fence, I see.
So it's really a communication issue between them. Not like he's being such a bad boy. However, you know, you want to work this out to your satisfaction. So,
yeah. Well, I want my puppy to be happy, you know, and so that he isn't. I don't want him to go over there and act like Mr. Tuffy either, the way he does. You know, he goes over to the fence and he'll start it half the time. He starts it half the time they do. But here's the thing, and maybe this translates to other people out there too. Once I've disciplined him, you know, he'll stay good for the rest of the day, but after a night goes by and he sleeps on a pillow next to me and everything's all good and fine and nice, and then next day you go out here and he'll do it right over again. He's just gone.
Do you yell at him when he does that?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
You know, I will call him a little... I call him a little bastard for doing it. It's true.
Yeah.
And I think about it after I've done it.
The yelling part,
yeah.
It doesn't even matter what you're saying so much, but the yelling part, what's really dysfunctional about that, he thinks you're barking at them too.
Okay.
Interesting.
Oh, very clarifying.
You know, it's like, well, she's barking. I could have covered that. I can bark.
I got it, Ma. Right.
So now we're all barking. Everybody's barking.
Oh, that's so interesting. I never thought of it that way, and that makes so much sense.
you got to just get inside their heads sometimes and understand.
What should Gwen do in a case like that? What's a better solution than yelling?
Well, I definitely wouldn't yell. I would pick him up, and I'd say, everything is just fine. Because part of the thing is, he thinks it's not. And so when you raise your voice, he thinks you're worried too. So you pick him up, and you just say, it's okay, baby. That's such a good boy. Such a good, good boy. And let's go in here, because everything's fine. You don't need to do any more.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring yourself to a calm place so that it's contagious.
I see. Like Cesar Millan says, calm and assertive, always. That makes perfect sense.
Yes. I don't like his way very much. But, you know, I mean, I think he's got... Yeah, I really... He's... To me, he's way too macho.
He does stress that you need to be... it made me a little uncomfortable not reading him, but because I haven't read the whole book. I saw the videos, and it would make me a little uncomfortable when he would be, you know, stressing, especially to someone who obviously wanted to just love and cherish the dog, but no, you can't allow the dog to rule you. You have to rule the dog. And I was, it went against my nature, because I'm a witch, too. I mean, you know. It's not natural to, you know, we don't have to dominate. It's not.
Yes, that's patriarchal crap. That, you know, dominator, dominated paradigm, you know, that's just not the way to go. And all the good ones know better, and they use positive reinforcement.
I always see it as, and it makes perfect sense. I never really thought about it that way, because I guess I saw, you know, on these shows, the people, they really did need to get their energy up, and I kind of saw it as, you know, being assertive with themselves, really, and then the animal feels that their vibration is a positive vibration, and therefore... balance is restored. But you're right, you know, to say that something needs to be dominant over the other, no, you're right. But I do see how he, you know, it's not the animals with the problem, it is the humans, and you can see it from the get-go. You're like, I wouldn't want to live with her either.
You know, it's always the humans that co-create the problem, which is why... If there's a persistent problem with an animal, I tell the people who come, let's say there's a woman and her child, I suggest that they all take the same remedies.
Oh, good idea.
You know what I mean?
Because
what good is it if I clean up the dog and the people put the crap back on them?
Right.
Because so oftentimes that's where it's coming from. This one dog that I was working on at a festival, he was in a crate in the group because he was so belligerent with other animals. And so I tuned into him, and I got that this woman was surrounded by violence. And I said, "Who do you live with?" And she says, "Nobody. It's just me and the dogs." I said, "Where do you work?" "Oh, at a maximum security prison for the criminally insane."
Whoa.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. So she is bringing this home to her animals because I read this off of her dog. And this must be the most sensitive dog in the pack, because he has to be segregated from the rest of the dogs in the family because he just gets too bad. And so I went over, and there's a remedy that I use from Green Hope Farms called Outburst. And it's made to take care of that outburst energy that dogs or cats or people or children, it's that excess electrical energy. They take in the stuff of their people or the other animals, and it's just too much for them, and they have an outburst because of it. And I brought that over... Excuse me?
What is the remedy called again? I think people would find that extraordinary.
Yes. It's called Outburst.
Okay.
And it's from the Green Hope Farm people. And I gave her the dropper full because I wouldn't be safe to do it. And she gave it to him. He settled right down, and she took him out of his crate to give it to him. And he climbed up on her lap, and she started bawling like a baby. And she said, "In all the years I've had him, he's never sat in my lap."
Wow. Oh, that's such a nice story.
Yeah.
It sure is.
And so many of our stories about animals aren't. But, you know, I like to tell and teach people about this because some of the stories, I have to say, will bring so much better relationship between humans and animals.
Well, and that's very important. And the other thing is that animals, with their unconditional love, you know, the dogs, the cats, even rabbits,
yes.
People who have all kinds of pets right now, I mean, it's, you know, it's just, it's statistically been proven. And lots of experiments run on it, but we just know that loving animals and having animals love us, it infuses healing in us. It helps us to recover from awful, you know, malady.
I must tell you, remember I said how I was very upset the last 2 days? The reason being, 4:30 in the morning, 2 nights ago, something inside me just said, go onto the computer and look at Facebook. And right there at the top of the news line was this post about Chinese dog treats. And I never, ever buy my dog treats from a regular store. But last week I did. And I read this thing that says all pure, organic, and there were no chemicals in it. And these were chicken strips. They're chicken jerky. And I gave them to my dog, not realizing they were from China. And I see this thing about 400-plus cases have been called in, and still the producers of this crap are not taking them off the shelves. And people need to know, no dog food, no dog treats from China. There's a new toxic agent, and they can't even pinpoint what it is. And what it does, technically, is it dumps glucose into the urine, which then invades and destroys the kidneys. So they have had deaths. They've had some deaths from this. And I treated my dog with homeopathy, and she wasn't really seeming sick, but I wasn't taking any chances. Brought her into the vet this morning after I did some treatments and just had a blood panel run on her and urine because I just, you know, whatever it costs, I'm not going to let her suffer.
I know.
Have a problem.
Yeah.
So she's fine. Thank the goddess she is fine. But people need to know, and why this country will not put an overall ban on Chinese products, especially food, for anybody, is beyond me. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go on that are beyond me.
Well, you know, China has been a big thing with dog food and cat food.
Exactly.
Products out of
China. 2008, we lost millions of animals to their garbage.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know it was so. I thought they got it off the shelves rather quickly.
Well, after a while, after many, many people brought in dead animals.
Oh, dear. Wow.
So,
and you really can't trust. I mean, look at how many people are ill now and getting sick from meat and vegetables.
Yeah.
And the regulation on our groceries and our product lines, they're just not what they once were, or maybe they never have been, and we've just gotten to be so haphazard that with production. Quality standards are a thing of the past.
For people or humans.
Right.
I mean, animals or humans.
Yes,
yeah.
I know what you meant.
Yeah.
Animals are people, too.
There you go. All the beings.
That's quite true. But do you work with the tigers and a lion? Do you work with horses too? Don't you?
Yep.
And can I ask you a question about horses?
Yeah.
Horses always seem to be sort of from my sister owned them. And I had one when I was little, but my sister owned them for a good part of her you know, young life. And I always thought horses were sort of always on guard. I don't know how else to put it. Now, they didn't seem to be frightened, but they always seemed to be on guard. Does that make sense? Or am I just...
Well, it depends on the horse. It really depends on the horse. But on one level, there's a little something to that because they are prey animals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that may be something you're picking up. But I lived with the most wonderful mare on the planet named China Moon for a good many years. Sadly lost her last year. And she was solid as a rock, and she wasn't the least bit spooky.
Hmm.
You could run a chainsaw near her, and she wouldn't flinch.
I lived in New York, and I lived in Boston, where there's mounted police, and those horses are well disciplined and
sure.
even friendly.
Oh, yeah.
There's lots of urban horses. I have to ask you. I'm sure you've been into large cities and you've had the opportunity to be around those horses. Are they happy with their lives in metropolitan areas and in such city locations?
Well, again, you know, it depends on the animals and depends who has them.
Okay.
I grew up right outside New York City, and
mm-hmm.
I lived in the Big Apple for about 5 years. And I was in and out of it since I was 13. What's that?
I said, I thought I heard an accent that came and
you
went
did.
Every once in a while.
Yep.
Yeah. I was like, she lived here for a while. I can tell. Well, that's cool. Go on.
Yeah. I mean, I loved getting a chance to be near horses when I was
Me
in
too.
New York.
They're my favorite. Yeah.
I mean, I would, you know, I would go up to the cops and, could I bet your horse?
Yeah.
And I rode since before I could walk.
Okay.
And it was only a couple of bad accidents, and now I don't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're absolutely wonderful creatures. And living with one, as I did, their energy is very big.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a mare. And so mares, they have their own very strident personalities, too, depending on when they're in and out of season, too. But she was so amazing. When I was doing magical work on the property, like putting crystals into the ground to define space and create healing energies, she would walk behind me like a priestess.
Wow.
Just
amazing.
I mean, there's nothing like having an Appaloosa mare at your back. I've got to say.
That's awesome.
And
wow.
she had
so
better
awesome.
Circle manners than most humans.
Really?
She would just
that
stand between the north
me.
And the east and just guard.
Hmm.
And one year, I had the Wise Woman Festival actually on my property. And one of the workshops was about equine massage and, of course, China. Was a very willing candidate to be the demo horse. So my friend Allison was working on her, and she was loving it. Just she was in seventh heaven being worked on, and she had a little circle of people around, and they were learning and watching. And after it was over, we were having African dance a little further down in the yard, and I could just hear her. She was going, "Oh, Mom, I love workshops. I'm going to another now." And so she walked over to African dance and just stood there and just grooved on the sound.
Wow.
I mean, I had a closer relationship with her than many people have with horses. And it is possible to have a very deep relationship with any animal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it really doesn't matter what kind of animal it is. And different ones have more and less limitations. But,
I
know,
have
you,
a question.
Yeah.
I wonder, with what you just said, Flash, what about reptiles? You know, lots of folks have iguanas and pet snakes. I'm wondering what kind of a relationship, what kind of because cats, four-legged, and even birds to a certain degree, the winged ones to a certain degree, but reptiles, I never know how to look for any kind of emotion. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Am I making sense, in other words?
Yes, totally. I mean, I had a friend who had a pet snake, and, you know, he was a very sweet guy. I think he was a small boa, and I remember one time, just for the thrill of it, I did a reading for her with him wrapped around my neck, and it was... actually felt great. And I felt, you know, just a real positive energy from the snake. But again, I wouldn't do that with every snake. I did it with him because she handled him a lot, and I knew that he was okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, it would not be my first choice as a pet. But, you know, I felt a warmth from him, and there's a lot of shamans, particularly of the African variety, who use them spiritually.
Oh, yes, yes, the standard. I get that one. What about iguanas? Now, we have so many of them down here now. We've got them. They are basically lost pets. I call them street dragons.
Uh-huh.
Because I was driving a cab to make a little extra cash, and you would find them at the strangest times in alleys and between buildings, and I mean they grow pretty big around here.
Yeah.
And it can be a little menacing in a way. I mean, I see them on my trees almost every day, at least one or two of them, and they'll be anywhere from 2 foot to one guy with the tail and all, you know, was, I swear to goodness, at least 4 foot and very big, you know, around the middle. I probably could have put my hands around him, but, you know, that's very big as far as an iguana. So I'm wondering, with an iguana, because I know that these were pets and they were let loose, and of course now they've multiplied and they're not indigenous and la, 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 but what kind of a pet are they?
Well, I honestly can't say because I've not experienced them. I would think that they'd be fine enough if you started with them as a little baby.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you grew up with it, and you gave it a lot of love, and you handled it. And then, like anything, it would be very loving to you.
Okay.
In its own little reptilian way.
That clenching onto you is just a labor of love for the the iguana. But I do know that people do have them, and they get very big, and they're wonderful pets for them because they love them very much.
Right.
And it's wonderful that we can make friends with animals and have them as companions. Saying that an animal is your pet is another way of incarcerating them verbally to a certain degree too. So I feel badly for, I used to feel badly for the animals at the zoo, even though I thought they were fabulous and they were exotic and they were dangerous and they kept your fascination. It was more heartbreaking to know that those animals were behind bars, you know?
Yeah.
And it leads into the question I was going to ask you about. Do you go to any zoos I know you go to animal rescues and to the what do they call them, habitats where they
sanctuaries.
Sanctuaries, yes. And oftentimes, you know, there's fences and whatnot, but have you been to any zoos? Do you work with any zoos in the area?
Not yet. You know, they have a lot more administration things going on and limitations, and that makes it harder to infiltrate and get the right kind of things done. Although However, I have definitely visited SeaWorld and shared crystals with the dolphins.
Oh, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what was that like?
Well, they love them. They explained that a crystal to them is like a cool drink of water.
Wow, cool.
And that it was just very refreshing to them. And it really helped them send out energy and communication to those in the wild.
Wow.
But, of course, you know, basically the ones that wind up in these places, in part, are doing it as a service.
I've heard this. I don't agree with... I swim with dolphins naturally.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe they belong there. I don't believe they belong there at all.
I was having a very hard time, and I still do, with anybody on the West Coast that's keeping dolphins right now because of the correction in crude oil that is most definitely in their water. And that's a hardship for me. That's very upsetting. We tried to go down to Marathon and release some of them. Well, everything was so bad. Now the dry tortugas are dying around the end of the seagrasses around the end of the state. And we shouldn't go down that path. Anyways, there's a huge corporation, and you probably know their name. I've forgotten it right now. and they have two facilities. One in Marathon and one on the West Coast, and they do the swim with the dolphins. So.
Right.
And they would not respond to any of us, any of our organizations, asking about what about the safety of the dolphins, which I thought was really pretty horrible.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I did when this began.
Wait, before you answer that, I have to run. I have an appointment. But it was so nice to meet you and to talk
nice
to you.
Meet you as
and
well.
I think you ladies, thank you. I think you guys should keep talking, and then I'll listen in later and find out the rest, yeah?
Okay.
Thanks, Nick. Have a great night. I'll talk with you later.
Very good. Enjoy, ladies. Good
thank
night.
You.
Good night. So you were going to, yeah.
Yeah, when BP first did their outrage on the water, I was just so upset. Doesn't even cover it. I was just totally freaked and despondent about sea life, particularly the dolphins and the whales, and. Yeah. They started communicating with me, which was great. I'm thinking, thank you. And they said, remember, we're all about sound and vibration. And those words kind of hung in the air, and I thought, oh, I get it. What do? I play with sound as a musician.
Yeah.
And so I got some of my keyboards together, and I found a couple of good sounds on there, and I shape-shifted with them as I played music. And I just kind of channeled this underwater-type music and played to them, and I could see myself swimming with them as a dolphin and trying to help them get to where the water was more pure.
Oh, gosh.
And I did this day after day after day, and then I gathered other people to do it with me on the full moons. And I did that for maybe 6 months.
Do you do it anymore?
I haven't done it in a while, but I still do it sometimes.
It probably wouldn't hurt
to do more.
It's when you're looking at the unstoppable amount of calves that are washing up, you know, dolphin, porpoise calves that are, you know. It's very hard, and I really don't want to go down that because, I'm very much like you. It has done a number on me, and actually why I started this whole radio business in the beginning was all about that. I do want to talk to you about also about all the other avenues of expression you have and all of the services that you do provide. You're psychic. And as well as a healer, you're a psychic. You're also a musician and an author.
Yes.
And I was wondering if we could. Now you created the Wise Woman Tarot.
Yes, I did. That was a little project of 25 years, and. You know, I wanted to create a deck that really embraced the global divine feminine because, you know, when I used Rider-Waite-Smith for years and years and years and liked it, but, you know, it was a bunch of white people. And I would always apologize to people of color that I read for. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, you know, this is a good tool, but it really is very racist. And I'm just saying that up front and apologizing. And that was one of my goals. Actually, I wasn't even thinking I was going to do a new deck. All I thought I was going to do originally was a book that was a good how-to about reading tarot because my students said, please, please package this. You do it so clearly. I haven't ever been able to learn like I learn with you. And I thought, okay. So I began work at writing this kind of book. And there was this one little imperialistic page, and it was called Visions for a New Deck. All it was going to be was a page or two, and Visions for a New Deck turned into a new deck, which was 15 years of research. And I'm a Pisces, and I did this in a very Piscean way. I didn't just say, let's see, I want a Native American for the Queen of Pentacles. And then, I got rid of all of the queens and kings, and I took the tarot out of the Middle Ages. And thought it was a bad time for women. Anyway, why in the world would we want to sustain kings and queens and knights and pages in this day? So I turned the queens into priestesses, the kings into shamans, the knights into seekers, and the pages into maidens. And it gave it a definitely a new look and a new way that was more equal and more representative, because I really believe that the tarot, where you want to really respect the ancient knowledge there, it's meant to be organic. It's meant to grow and change with the times.
Yeah.
And I oddly kind of got the idea about that from Crowley. From Aleister Crowley, woman hater par excellence, because he hinted at a couple of things.
Good at correspondences.
Yeah. He hinted, he said, everything is right except the star and the emperor, something like that. Mm-hmm. We're out of place. And so I studied the Kabbalistic information that hooked up to that, and I got what he was trying to say but wasn't going to say. And that the energy, instead of there being, when you see the goddess, you usually see her in a triple form. It's a triple moon goddess. It's more usual. Whereas in the old tarot, the traditional tarot, you had the priestess, and then you had the empress, and then you had the emperor. So you've got the priestess representing really like the maiden aspect of the goddess, the empress representing the full moon, and the waning moon, which would be the death aspect, is being represented by the emperor. And so, of course, in patriarchy, he would have that spot in the old view of the tarot.
Oh.
Hence war. Hence all of the destruction of the patriarchy. Instead of having an image of a deity that was more like Hecate, which was when you have the triple goddess, you have life and birth and death, and then the circle continues and continues. In patriarchy, you have a straight line, life, death. Without that cycle, the culture is as it is, and it's a toss-away culture. And so, you know, these were some of the things that I got into as I was studying the tarot and figuring out just how to redo the major arcana. And I did.
Oh.
I did considerably.
It sounds like a really great learning experience going from your point of view through.
Yeah.
And people can find your tarot at at your website, and also do you is it on the bookshelves through one of the distributors also?
It's easier to just go to my website, flashsilvermoon.com.
Okay.
Because I can't say it's uniformly around the country.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, I'll put that up on the...
And Amazon.com has it, calling it out of print, and they're charging, I think, like $140 for it. It is not out of print, and it should not be under $40.
Oh, shit.
I think my price is $35.95 for the whole set.
Wow. That's
book
a,
and
that's
deck.
That's a very reasonable price.
Yeah.
You know, I also noticed that you do an astro flash.
I do.
A horoscope. Now, are you an astrologer? Have you studied astrology? Or what is your method? Okay.
I've been an astrologer for some 40 years.
Wow.
And I love astrology. I
have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question. Grandmother Sky, Barbara Clow, has, and I've used the information that she's done on her astro flash for the last few years. Are you aware of it?
Is this Barbara Hand Clow?
Yes.
Okay, I never knew she had an astro flash. That's interesting. But I love her work.
She's done it for the last, like, 7 years, 7 or 8 years. Han Clow is the 2012.
Yeah, I've read her books, but I've not seen her astroflash.
It's on her site, which is called Han Clow 2012, I believe. But she quit. Her last one, because she didn't put up monthly. Her astroflash was solstice equinox.
Uh-huh.
And, just prior to the last solstice was the last one she did. And she said, and I listened to her on the radio, trying to get her to settle on a date to come on and do with us here. What she said was very interesting. She's quit doing the astro flash because she does not feel that after this year, the same tools that she has been using, whether it's sidereal or, you know, the tools that she has used for so many
right.
years are simply not working or valuable as they once were. Everything is changing, and it's a more cosmic view that has to be taken. I thought it was a fascinating thing to say, and it's a fascinating idea because it's not geocentric that she's talking about, and I was
uh-huh.
wondering how you see that, how it's going with the alignment and the energy of the planets and the stars right now. From your point of view, I'm looking for that perspective.
Well, it's a very
whether
interesting
you
question. It's an interesting question. My astro flash has two parts. One is like an overview where I take into consideration what's happening in the heavens within that month. And I'll probably talk about a full moon and a new moon and some other major aspects for the month. And then the second part is Aries through Pisces. And how I've done that part, and I've been doing astro flash for, gosh, a good 20 years.
Wow.
I used to have astro flash in a magazine called, what was it? It was an International Women's Spirituality Magazine. Of a Like Mind was the name of it. And I discovered Of a Like Mind.
Okay.
And so I was in there for many years until they folded. And I discovered in doing that segment of each of the signs that rather than sitting and pondering, what does this mean for an Aries, I just let Aries speak. And I would channel it, essentially. And like Aries might sound like, well, I don't know about you, but I'm looking for some excitement right about now. And I give the sign a voice. And, oh, my goodness, it writes itself. And it's
that
so,
is so cool.
And it's so much better. So, so much better. And
well, it's approachable, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
People can sit with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and rather than saying, Aries this month, it's going to be like this, that, and the other. I let Aries talk for itself and say what's going to be up. And
wow.
And before I do that, of course, I've saturated my brain. You know, I'm using both the right and the left side to do it. And I've saturated
mm-hmm.
my brain with all the information of technically what's going on. And then I just let it rip from Aries to Pisces for each of the individuals. But in terms of back to the question about what Barbara Hand Clow's perspective is, over the last
yeah.
3 months or so, I've noticed that in my overview, I'm finding myself less talking about the individual planets and aspects, and it's more
yeah.
broad, and it's more just talking about the energy. So I think I'm picking up what she is.
It seems I always, you know, we all have our little ways,
right.
ways, whatever. We all have our ways of drawing energy from above to supply us with what we need when we're healing, when we're doing something, whenever we're working with light or sending energy. And my specific exercise has always begun with the heart of heaven or the black hole center of the galaxy. I dove into this one slash one. I've always been extraordinarily interested in the occult, as they used to say. But
oh yes.
In 1988, my mother crossed, and after she did, something shifted with me. Of course, there was a lot of grief. However, I began to travel very broadly, and my sister was with me a great deal, and she was taking me in and out of every metaphysical and New Age shop throughout Europe, and I was awakening something different, but I had no idea that just a few months earlier, really, in August of 87, harmonic convergence had happened.
Uh-huh. Remember it well.
My sister and I came back from a trip, and in 1990, we opened Daughters of Isis in Pompano Beach. And she built a little apothecary, and I put a bookstore together, and we started to sell crystals and stuff. And I learned as I went. And I have to say that learning, I've done everything sort of by instinct and intuition and sort of hurried and run and studied and followed up afterwards. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
And I began by Bear and Company. I ordered a lot of books, and that's where a lot of my, I guess you might say, I cut my teeth on
yes.
a lot of their information and authors. Wonderful group of people. Very enlightening, very broadening. And it took me several times to get through it, but I finally got through the Mayan factor. And it opened a lot of doors for me. At the same time, I'm learning how to work with energy. I'm applying my own study and fascination for culture to all of it. You know, on and on, it all comes tumbling out. And so I began working with the Heart of Heaven and bringing a spiral of light out and through the sun and then on down, and if it was evening, through the moon. And that's how I've drawn energy from on high, and I just, it was natural for me to do so that way. And I never knew any better until somebody would tell me, oh, you don't do it that way, or something like it, you know. But everybody, of course, everybody has their own method, and nothing is wrong, you know.
Right.
I was, so when I read this from Barbara Clough saying that she was going to cease her specific way of doing astro flash and reteach. I think she's teaching herself how to do it new.
Hmm.
And now you speak about, I love what you say, how you do this, how you channel it. That's absolutely wonderful. And so I'm wondering, are people just naturally, because I run into folks and, you know, in our community, I guess you would say, and people do seem to be reaching more. I think that one of the great problems that we face at this time is re-embracing the original cosmic vision of our ancestors in harmony with the earth. Does this make sense?
Of course.
Right. And I think that's what's happening within our leadership and our decay and decline right now as the different societies are, you know, perishing with economy. But, good Lord, did I say perishing?
Yeah,
really,
that came up.
She's got a mouthful of it, you know. But here's the thing. If we are beginning to reach, those of us who are allow ourselves to walk with spirit, I think that's a good way to put it, because
sure.
it, you know, you and I may embrace a more, you know, cultural perspective on it from earth-based, yet reaching out into a cosmic energy standard. How do we have to write a whole new language, don't we? Really?
Well, you know, maybe so, but what I'm thinking when I hear you say that, I think it's going to be more through thought transference. I think it's going to go beyond that kind of language that we'll be able to communicate without words.
Well, here we are.
Not that there's anything wrong with words, but
no,
I think we're going to streamline.
Well, and basically that's what technology has been teaching us to do, is to awaken both sides of the brain and begin to work with all our subtle sensuality once again, yes?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I teach the tarot, I tell my students, I said, okay, now I did write a really good book, and it's got a lot of tools for you in there, but what I want you to do first is pick up the card, get what you get, say it out loud, you know, give your reading, then look it up. So this way, you're not just memorizing and memorizing what I wrote down. You're using your intuition to get at something that is there. And then you can always go back to the meanings that I wrote down and add.
Well, you're teaching them to honor their own intuition and to develop it more fully. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's, I said, whether I'm talking to you about animals or cards or stones, it doesn't matter. The subject, first thing, is to become your first authority. You're the go-to girl, you know, that you want, and to have access to that part of your psyche at all times. You don't have to worry, do I trust Flash or don't I? If you trust you, if you listen to that first piece of information that comes flying at you, grab a hold of it and know that that's the right thing.
Yeah. Wow. So you're seeing that things are shifting in a way, not a way, but it's almost as if we're melding into something new. The old isn't working the way it used to. Do I make sense when I say that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that there's all levels of this shift going on. My work has always been, like I said, about 10 years ahead at least, whether it be music or magic. I'm definitely out there on the edge. So my shift is going to look different than someone else's, who is just sort of moving out of the ideas of doing what their parents taught them.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be waking up to, oh, maybe everything isn't just as my parents told me or the church told me or the state told me. I think I'm going to start reading some different books and, you know, getting off of mainstream media and
mm-hmm.
looking for some more information that's not as readily available. Whereas, you know, you or I may have passed that threshold years ago.
You know, I certainly see your point. I remember that we used to speak about the critical mass.
Yes.
If so many get it. Let me just say, I suspect that we actually are in our community at a critical mass.
Yes.
Is that possible?
I think it is, yeah. And it better be.
You got that? That's a mouthful. Yes.
And we better be approaching, or if not in that place, because there isn't that much time to change things slowly and methodically. The most recent gem elixir I made is called The Shift, and I make one every year. And the energy from this particular gem elixir is probably the most powerful thing I've made yet. There's equally, you know, probably about representing the energies of maybe 40 stones. some outside the bowl, some inside the bowl. And the overall energetic that I get from the stones that were chosen, and I say, okay, show me who's jumping in the bowl. And when I, because I communicate with the rocks as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see what seems to want to go in there, and then I double check with a pendulum. And that's how they get in the bowl or not.
Wow.
And
okay, so you use a pendulum. That's a great
That's my double check.
Yeah.
First, I just get the energy, and then I double check with the pendulum in terms of what's going to go in the bowl or not. And for this particular mix, the energies that I got looking at the threads of what was in there was grounding, flexibility, and elevation. So that in order to deal with these energies of this shift, we need to be grounded in our own way. And that doesn't mean grounded to the earth necessarily per se, but grounded to something that feels whole and steady. And then that flexibility to move with what needs to be moved with, and then the elevation to bring it all to fruition. That's what I got from this mix.
It sounds like a really wonderful remedy, or actually opener.
Yeah.
I would think
and I
that
make
would
it
open.
A spritz bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can just spritz yourself. And using just plain gem elixirs, what's neat about them is they fly under the radar. Aside from just being good, they fly under the radar if you need them to. Because they don't taste or smell like anything.
Right.
And so if you're working in a situation like in a traditional hospital or office where you can't have people wondering what the hell you're doing, it just appears to be water. But, of course, it's a lot more. You can't use a smudge bowl everywhere, but you can use a gem elixir, like one of the ones I make is called Aura Cleanse. You could use that or Fiery Wall of Protection. Anywhere you might use sage with nobody's going to know. And people who are allergic to smoke don't have to be bothered.
Yeah, smokeless smudge, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I work with white sage that way. I wonder... people are going through, it seems, exaggerated symptoms of anything lately. I've noticed that I found a wonderful writer. Her name is, I think, Denise LaFay. She puts she has a website up, a blog called Transitions, and she's been remarkably, as far as I'm personally concerned, and people who have come to me, she's been very accurate with symptoms and things with all of the raising energies around the planet right now. And I'm wondering, how would people work with your gem elixir, the shift, to help them right now? I mean, is this something that could be helped for some? I mean, like one of the symptoms is headaches that come and go, like pressure on your cranium.
Well, if it's related to the energetic shift, I would take it and I'd spritz it all around my head.
Okay. Yeah. So, in other words, these symptoms that we're feeling, I mean, do you know what I mean by these exaggerated symptoms? Do you hear about it from people? Do you experience it yourself? Am I hitting a resonant tone here with you?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like in my psychic work with people, what I'm noticing, and I've said this out loud to friends, I said, it feels like everything I'm doing these days is big. you know, that every client is coming to me with major issues. We're cleaning up big, big stuff, whether it's, you know, one person or another, whether I've never seen them before or they're longtime clients. And whether it's in my office or on the telephone, it does not matter. Everybody's doing the big stuff now.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people that are there's people moving unexpectedly. Well, that's the, you know, the housing situation. But also relationships that had yet no idea that they were going to changing. I mean, it's, and these things go on all the time, always have throughout life, but it's in the numbers and with the pressure, there is a difference. Now, I'm actually saying that, and at the same time, I'm asking you, are you seeing that?
Definitely. And part of that, you can see as an astrologer, we've got a lot of shifting with the outer planets, and they are slow movers. So, for instance, before Obama got in, Pluto shifted from Sagittarius to Capricorn.
Right.
And when Pluto was in Sagittarius, the big issues that were floating around, which shouldn't have ever been big issues, but was all this right-wing religious fervor. And it was so much about, you know, whose God is good and whose isn't, and just all that kind of garbage. And as soon as Pluto went into Capricorn, if you notice, it went away. And it's all about money and corporations and the budget.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that that right-wing religious fanaticism totally went away, but in terms of being front and center, it had to move aside for the whole thing with the banking and the corporate nonsense.
Well, it seems as though that these are just symptoms, too. It's like, it's a terrible expression, but it really brings home the shock. It's like pulling the scab off of America and off of Western, you know, profiteering. But mostly off of America, when you consider that our founding fathers built this country on what we're beginning to open our eyes and really accept and understand was slavery. And that we annihilated culture here to make way for ourselves. And that we have built our, you know, I mean, hey, we have that American myth thing going on, which is built on lies and on the backs of you know, even my own ancestors who came over. It's as if that all of these symptoms right now are just the hand that's coming down to rip off the rest, so that people begin to realize. And I think Occupy is basically a positive symptom. In fact, I would call Occupy the only thing that I have seen that actually says that there is an evolution going on globally, because
I agree.
It's a global thing. I see it as a very spiritual and positive thing. But you see where I'm going here, what I'm saying.
Sure.
There's a huge society, and we know we've known this was coming. We've been marching towards it since what, harmonic convergence?
Yeah.
And so there is an extraordinary alignment that will come up. And I ask this of most astrologers, that even when I'm just sitting here talking with them, because I'm fascinated to know how, of course, I'm not asking you to prognosticate. I'm asking you your considered opinion of what we're facing and what is going to happen this year ongoing energetically, so that we will, we're giving out information here that's good for people to go with. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Some balance, as it were, for the, you know, any of us who are working from this perspective of spiritual, political, just the human condition at this time on planet Earth. I think that gets it better than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the main things is to really figure out what means the most to you and hold on to it. Keep it close to you, whether this is your family, your lover, your animals, all of the above, your beliefs, your friendships, your community, that you really want to start defining yourself more by what you are and what you want rather than what you aren't. I think that it's time that everybody really know who they are and where they stand. And I don't say that in a you're either with me or against me kind
no,
of attitude.
I didn't think you were. Yeah.
Not at all.
You're saying self-definition, self-awareness, and
yes,
honoring yourself is the strength that we need collectively to make it through.
Yes. And certainly becoming more community aware and growing your communities to be more sustaining, to be able to be off the grid as much as possible. I encourage people as much as they can to get out of the cities. And by that I mean any of them, and most specifically those that are on coastlines. Because I do think we're going to be dealing with big water. Because Neptune went into Pisces February 3rd, and that's very significant. That's one of the outer planets. We have Uranus in Aries, Neptune in Pisces, and Pluto in Capricorn. And so what will be happening this June is Uranus and Pluto are squaring, and those two characters are very intense, and they're about revolution and change. And, you know, it can be very earth-shaking. And I, as I'm speaking, I'm not trying to think things through. I'm just trying
right.
to channel what wants to come through. And when
right.
I say earth-changing and earth-shaking, I mean it. I think we're going to have much more going on in the Ring of Fire. And, you know, I hope that my friends on the West Coast will be safe. And, you know, and I hope people will start to just have their ears to the ground. And on one level, any place can be safe or unsafe. You know, wherever
yeah.
things go down, there's people who survive and people who don't.
I see what you're saying.
But there's certainly places that are a better investment to survive in. And when I moved here
yeah.
from New York City in 75, I moved to this part of Florida knowing that the tectonic plates were solid here, that there were not likely to be any cataclysmic earth changes where I am. That was part of what I was looking at in 75 when I thought about coming here. I didn't want to be by either coast, and I didn't want to be in a city. And I just felt that was just the best idea that I could do for myself and live a good life and focus on the positive always. Because, I mean, there's a lot of...
I'll tell you, you know, I see what you're saying. I can remember at that time I was just going off to school in upstate New York, but I've been between New York and Florida my whole life. And I remember the Navy sonar did remarkable underwater sonar pinging. on Florida. And do you know that the majority of the upper part of the state is resting on geology, that it's resting on like two upside down pyramids? Did you know that?
I didn't.
No, it's fascinating. It's fascinating, but I certainly understand what you're saying. I can remember in the early 90s when they had all those maps. Do you know what I mean by the
maps? I do.
Of,
yeah, I forget his name, but it was
was
it going to be safe?
Right, and Florida was just not even there, and I looked at it, and I said, you know, well, I just
yes,
don't
it
think
was.
That's correct.
Yes, it was. There was parts that were there.
We had one on the wall in the shop, and I can remember, but I remember thinking that I don't think anybody really has it down because, frankly, it's a lot of years, and now here we are, and these earth changes, these drastic earth changes there have been drastic earth changes, but not the same as, you know, it was that map had predicted, correct?
Right. Well, you know, yes and no. I think we haven't gotten to some of those. I think
well,
it's
I
very
know
possible.
We did have floods that
right.
from the stats photographed, and it looked like the United States was cut in half from all the floodwaters. I remember that happened like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, basically the suggestion is that from the Great Lakes down to the Gulf, that the Mississippi would become an inner ocean. And I honestly don't find that impossible. But there's two things. One is that there are light workers all around the world who work daily to have the best possible outcome. And that's not to be sneezed at and
not
overlooked.
One bit, right.
And because a prediction is made in 2000 or 1990 or whatever, there's always things that can change, be it for better or worse, based on what people do. You know, if I give a reading to someone, I say, wow, job looks great, you're going to get a raise this month, looking good. And if I say all that, and then the person goes, oh, Flash says, I've got it made, I'm just going to take some days off. Well, they can just screw their whole deal up. And likewise, I say, I'm really worried about you on the highway. I don't like you taking a trip this weekend. And so they go in, they take the car, and they just say, oh, wow, the ball joints are busted. Or the engine is not firing on all pistons. And they fix it. And then they can go. You know, it's the same thing.
Well, what would you suggest? This is one of the things I was coming to. What are your suggestions to people who are listening that they can do to help marshal us through or birth us through this shift at this time? You were just speaking about all of the wonderful work that's being done by light workers all over the world, Planet Art. There's just so many networks, including Chopra's network and such. There are global meditations that we all get the emails for and such. But there are everyday things that we can do. I mean, I know I have my own little personal practices, but do you have some good suggestions for folks, what they can do to help, you know, bring bring us through, as it were?
Well, part of it has to do with some house cleaning in terms of the friend department, associates, groups. If you find that you're having to spend most of your energy mopping up after people energetically, You need to rethink the associations.
Good
so advice. That you are gathering energy from the most positive people, that you're reinforcing that goodness in yourself, and you're not hanging out with people who complain every day or just see the negative every day, that you gather with people who, you know, they have their eye on the prize, and they are seeing a world that is improving, even though we can look around everywhere and see how it's not. And it's not that we don't want to be Pollyannas, we don't want to be ostriches, but we do want to have a positive vision to aim for and recognize the trials and tribulations that are upon us, but not be governed by fear. Because that is immobilizing people. And that's part of the plan.
Yes,
it's absolutely
it
part of their weapon. And, you know about the false flag stuff and all the ways that we get manipulated by the media to be so frightened in our boots that we can't do the next right thing, which is what we have to do. And for each of us, that may look a little bit different. But it's really important that we figure out, what did I come here to do? Am I doing it? If not, why not? And let's get busy. What am I uniquely qualified to do for the world? Maybe there's, 10 other people who could do it as well or better, but where do I fit in the whole beautiful tapestry of world saving? And let's do it.
That's well put. I like that.
And, when you get into political circles, there's always people who are deciding, your way isn't as good as my way. My way is the right way to do it. And if you don't do it my way, then you're getting in the way. And, there can be some really self-destructive things going on. But
I think that Occupy has really provided some positive on that with their consensus. A lot of older folks, I'm here in West Palm Beach, and our Occupy group is made up of many elders, which is really kind of cool. You know, we have one distinction down here, Flash. We are the only Occupy group in the country so far that has not had one arrest. I can't figure out what we're doing wrong.
Maybe the cops are just too embarrassed to hit an old fogey.
Well, and then we've got these very, it's like we've got these wonderful elders, and I mean elders. And, we've got some World War II vets with us. It's amazing. And then we have these very young grad students who are just excellent activists, but we're also a very small group. My point is that the consensus method of the GA is very hard for some of the elders. They would rather see, why don't we just do majority? Well, no.
Let's do Robert's rules.
they want to do it the old way, and it's like, no, you have to, this is not how general assemblies that are doubling the Occupy movement, that are growing the Occupy movement are done. It has to be consensus, and learning about consensus method of choosing is, I think, very equitable. And very calming too.
Yes.
And it's also fair, and you feel good about that,
Yeah, I think it's a more matriarchal way. It's more circular and less of a straight line.
You're absolutely right on that one. You're absolutely right. So people, the points that you are making is that folks should be really searching their heads and hearts, but from the heart center. They should be searching themselves to what makes you happy and what are you good at, because inevitably, I think folks do the best at what makes them happy, right?
Yeah.
And to use, that is their gift and their skill for planet saving at this
mm-hmm.
point. And we really need to embrace that. Yes?
Oh, absolutely.
And,
if not now, when?
Yeah, and if not who? If not me, who?
Yeah.
And being in, you are also very, very, you've said, I think, three times in our conversation in the last 2 hours, you've spoken about being in someplace safe, and like yourself, you moved to a specific part of Florida that you knew was going to be safe. You think folks should, you know, choose their home.
Yes.
With great regard.
Yes.
That's all good stuff. That's all very good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, and of course, you know, it's always a good idea to stockpile the things you like and you need that make it harder to get.
Like food?
Yeah, like food, like medicine.
Like safe food. Like
yeah.
safe food.
If you can find
and
it.
This is not to sound like we're survivalists, but we're
nope.
trying to survive right now.
Yeah. Yeah,
with good health, and one of the ways is now I'm watching a lot of little. My sister finally has a yard she can use. She moved, she went through, she lost her home, and she's moved across the street from me into a little mother-in-law place that's in the back, and she has a little yard for the first time in a while, and she's planning on putting a garden in.
Perfect.
She's already bought her tomato plants and things like that. I think we should be thinking about growing root vegetables and as well as fruits and such. But Florida's a great place to grow fruit.
It is. I have a yard full of tangerines.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
And
the fresh,
my,
clean energy.
Yeah, my yard, I have quite a relationship with the trees. They do interesting things, and, I mean, I'll throw seeds out, and several years later, I've discovered I've got a new tangerine tree, and
wow.
that's producing, with no help by me, except, of course, the meditations.
That's wonderful. I used to get tangerines when I was living in Boston. I moved there in 99 and moved back down here in the end of 07. And that sounds so strange in a way to say 07. But I used to put tangerines into the, you know, the ice box. And in the middle of winter, I would get a tangerine out in the evening to peel and eat, and peeling it, the oil, you know, from the rind would
yes.
pop, and it would remind me of home. Right? For me, it was Florida. It was, you know, down here.
I must tell you an interesting tangerine story.
Yeah.
When I was about to make one of the gem elixirs about a year ago, I was walking out to the little white room where I work, and to my surprise, the tangerines started talking to me. And see, when you're listening, and they, you know, when nature starts to know, they got a listener afoot, they start talking.
Yeah.
Actually, they're always talking. They'd finally, you listen. And they said, and it was a very female voice. I go, would it be possible for us to be part of this process with the gem elixirs? And I was stunned. Oh, I said,
that's kind of.
I said, of course. And, you know, they're, the trees were all around the work area. I said, of course they are. And I was so thrilled and so delighted to hear from these plants. And later on that day, a friend of mine who's an herbalist came over, and she works in Chinese medicine, and I told her, I said, it's amazing, this is what the tangerine said. And it was so perfect. She hadn't been here in months, and she was just the right person to talk to. She says, well, in Chinese medicine, the tangerine skin is considered the strongest buster of qi that gets stagnant that there is. So
yeah.
in their world, it's a very, very powerful medicine. And
yeah.
I thought, well,
yeah.
I'll be.
And my sister's an acupuncturist.
Yeah. So it was wild to hear from the tangerines and then to hear also
yeah.
what they can do. And it was very much in league with what I was trying to do with that essence.
Wow. That's
so,
amazing. But it happens.
Yeah.
It happens like kismet, like that, and the most powerful remedies come up that way. You know, we are down to about a minute.
Oh my!
And I have to tell you, this has been wonderful. I
yeah.
so appreciate you coming on and sharing with us.
Yeah, I would, you know, enjoy doing this again sometime. I had taken out the passages you wanted about the Temple of Isis, but that's just going to have to be for another day.
Well, we will do this again, and I will get in touch on the backside tomorrow or the next day, because I would like to send you a little package and perhaps do a trade out.
Sure.
Gee, this has been fun. Thank
it
you
has.
So much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Before we sign off, I'd like to remind everybody that tomorrow, don't forget to tune in at 4 p.m. For yours truly, doing that strange stream of consciousness, talking about all of the different Occupy that is going on across the country in our Occupy block tomorrow, with the rest of our little indie shows. And once again, thank you to Flash Silver Moon, who will be back with us soon. Probably with Anita, too.
Yay. Can we tell them how to find me?
We can. Please do.
If you would like to connect with me, please come to my website, flashsilvermoon.com, and you can friend me on Facebook as well. It's Silver Moon, flashsilvermoon.com, and on Facebook, just my name, Flash Silver Moon. And I'd be more
Thanks,
than happy Flash. To work with you. Thank
you
very
so
much. This is a very delightful show.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night.